everyone, and welcome to Minute 22 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Derek McDuff of the Underrated Podcast. Welcome back for another episode, Derek.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. I'm excited to keep diving into this movie.
Yes, as we try and dig through it.
Yes, exactly. Diving, digging, you know, yeah. Burrowing through it, crawling through it for it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that.
I mean, it's only, what, 5 football fields? So, minute 22 begins with Boggs looking like he's in love and ends with Brooks telling Jake's history. So we left things off yesterday with Andy showing up at the mess hall with everybody else after he's following the crowd, and he basically reaches the point where he's trying to find a seat. You know, it's like all those high school movies where someone's trying to, you have the main character who just doesn't sit at the cool table. So he's looking
for Right. It's his first day at school. He doesn't have any friends yet, you know, so he doesn't know where to sit. Everyone else has their cliques and he's just kind of like looking around.
That's right. And I think it fits in really well with that concept. You know, for me, whenever I think of lunchroom scenes, I think of Better Off Dead.
Okay.
Where he's trying to find where to sit. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, absolutely.
Yeah. So we know that he doesn't really he doesn't know anyone, obviously. Unless he started making friends with some guys on the on the bus,
right? One of whom is not around anymore.
Well, we know he's in the infirmary, so yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's true. We have not found his fate out ultimately.
That is correct. So we ended things yesterday with Boggs, with him passing Boggs. Who is obviously a character who hasn't really been introduced yet, but anyone who's seen the movie knows who Boggs is, and he just looks at him very dreamily. I think that's the word.
Sure, why not? As we talked about last time, we can make up words if we want.
That's right. And you know that the we only get him for like a fraction of a second, and then we see everyone else stuffing their faces. You know, so we get to see some of the entourage. I mentioned this before. I love the names of all these guys on the entourage because these are the funniest names, the character names. And I didn't even know it until I started doing research for this. Floyd and Haywood. Those are the two that you know. But you know, you have Skeet and Jigger and Snood and Ernie. Yeah, so we get a quick shot of some of them. So we get right. to see Floyd, and we get to see Skeet. You know, and they're just looking at their food.
And then some real 1940s prisoner names.
Yes, completely. And then we see Red also. Red's actually using a fork, unlike everyone else.
a little more refined, and you know, this is the kind of what I was alluding to last week about everybody's kind of just resigned to do the thing. They're like most of these guys have quote unquote devolved to the point where they're not even using utensils anymore. This is just their life, just shoveling food in their face because this is how you start every day. This is you just this awful gruel that's in front of you. Andy takes a second. This is his first time, you know, and he finds something unexpected. Yes. But he's not just kind of indiscriminately shoving, A, because, you know, he's never experienced this before, but B, because he's a more thoughtful soul than a lot of these people.
Right. Well, based on what we know of Andy, he's probably never been in a mess hall before in his life.
Right, yeah. He's a fancy lawyer,
That's right. Well, a fancy banker.
Or not a lawyer, a banker. Banker, yeah.
Right. And then again, going back to Roger Deakins, a great panning shot of all of the guys here. You know, and then we get to see Jigger also eating by his hands, and you see the back of Brooks as Andy walks past them and sits down at the table right across from them. So, you know, he's right across from where Brooks is, diagonally. And then Andy, you know, there's a prisoner next to Andy that looks over at him. And Andy then picks up his spoon and gets ready to start eating the food. And he digs into the gruel for 1 second and then looks down. And he's slightly confused and then doesn't really know what to do. And he uses the spoon. He pulls the spoon away a little bit and then pulls out a little worm.
Yeah, I would call it like a grub, you know, almost. It's like something Timon and Pumbaa would eat.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, we're not really sure what it is. I don't think it really makes a difference.
Yeah. Some kind of like insect
Right,
larvae.
but we see
So
that it's also
it
still moving, which means
would be.
you know, that this isn't something that just, you know, was cooked. It somehow fell into the pot. You know, that's which is very interesting, the way that they.
It does a lot of just that one moment does a lot of really interesting stuff for the movie because it's explaining to you how the ba how bad this is going to be at this prison where like the food is literally crawling with bugs. And B, it's going to in just a second. And Andy's reaction is also really great too, where he's like he's kind of like he looks at it. He's not doesn't react with like a huge reaction. He's not disgust. He's disgusted, but it's smaller. It's internal, so you can tell that he's like, okay, this is the kind of thing that I'm going to have to get through. And then you go into Brooks's reaction, which
We'll
we can talk
get
about
to
in a
in a
second, which
second.
I
We'll
also
get to in a
really
second.
love. Yeah.
Right, and I still remember the first time I saw this movie, how shocked I was by this part of the scene, as I will mention in a second. So Andy's just looking at the thing, and then the camera switches to Brooks, and we see this old man, you know, just looking over, and he goes, "Are you gonna eat that?" And I must say, my original reaction when I first heard that the first time was, "Oh my God, this guy wants to eat, you know, the bug." You know, and that's
As
what
was mine, as I think that was
that's
the
what they want.
intent
Of
of Frank
course, that's what they
Darabont's.
want. They want us to believe that. They want us to believe that this old man has now asked, you know, for the you know for this bug. And you're like, "Oh my God, this is what's going on in prison."
Right. It's these things are so bad here that people are literally been like, "Hey, can I
That's
have
right.
that bug?" You know, and then you get the reverse shot of Morgan Freeman and everyone else kind of like looking on. With there's nothing in their face that could give you any kind of insight as to what is
That's
happening
right.
with these
And
people.
then Andy looks at him and goes, I hadn't planned on it."
Which is a very funny line. Objectively, a very funny reaction because it's like, how else do you respond to
That's
that
right. Are
question?
you gonna eat that? Well, I wasn't planning on it, but you know. And then Brooks, you know, puts out his hand and says, "Do you mind?" And then we get the shot that you were talking about with everyone else has stopped eating. They're just looking over. And you know, we see Floyd is smirking all the way at the end, you know, because they're aware of what's really going on here. And then Andy just gives the worm over to Brooks. And he looks at it and starts smiling and he goes, "Ah, that's nice and ripe." And again, you still think that he's about to eat this.
And I love that when he grabs it, it looks like for like a second, like he's putting it up to his mouth. Like his hand movement is so perfectly choreographed where you're like, what are you doing with this, buddy? Before you find out what really happened.
Yeah, no, it's but yeah. You know, I would be very interested. So I you know, this whole thing started making me think about the idea of you know, people actually eating worms, maybe a worm eating challenge or things like that, you know. And
Fear factor.
that's true also, that is a place that you would look for that. But apparently there are what are known as stunt eaters that that do it in order to try to break records like world records and things like that. And I mean, there's even a Guinness Book of World Record of the idea here. They had it for many years and it was very competitive, but they decided to stop it because of animal welfare and conservation concerns. So I guess it means
Save the
I guess
worms.
it means they even took it out of the book, the idea. Now, what do you think the record is?
For amount of worms eaten, like what's the time frame here? Like, is it like Joey Chestnut where they have like a minute to eat as many worms as possible, or how does it work?
Okay, so the record that was set in 1998 is how many night crawlers could someone eat in 30 seconds?
30 seconds. Nightcrawlers are pretty small. I'm gonna just say 30.
94.
All right, man. Like, hey, like whatever people want to do to get in the record books, I guess, sorry that you ate 90 nightcrawlers and you don't even honor your
94,
records anymore. That's a
94.
bummer.
Right. And there
94.
was another record
Pretty
for
specific.
earthworms, live earthworms. How many do you think someone ate in 20 seconds?
Oh man, I bet you could slurp those down like spaghetti. I'm gonna say 20 seconds. I'm gonna say, let's say 63.
Two
Three worms
hundred.
a second. Oh my gosh. All right. And these are
Yes.
live, I'm
Yes,
assuming, right? These worms. All right. You learn something new every day here on Move
isn't that the
Around.
point? So so the Guinness Book actually changed it. So now they have the idea of how many gummy worms, right. So how
Oh, well.
many gummy worms do you think actually it goes by weight. What weight of gummy worms is currently the record of being eaten in 30 seconds?
Feel like my dad would own this record. I'm gonna say a pound of gummy
It's
worms. I don't know.
130 grams, which is 4.58 ounces.
Okay.
So
Okay. All right.
what is that? That's about I don't even know how to do the calculation on that. But it's not even close. It's not a
Yeah,
pound.
no, I am
A
not
pound
good
would
with
be
that stuff
about,
either.
what is it, 400 grams. So it's like a quarter pound. It's okay, but you know what?
Okay.
That's still a lot.
That's a lot of gummy worms. That's a lot of gummy worms.
Yeah, that's
I wonder if they were original or sour. I bet they're original. Sour, I
it's
feel like, would be harder.
0.287 pounds, 0.287 pounds, which is just over
Okay, all
a
right.
quarter pound. So it's a quarter
So
pounder.
I.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Quarter pound
Yeah.
with cheese. A
Yes.
Royale.
And what we're going to talk about one more, and there is a Guinness Book of World Records for the most worms that were removed from a stomach. Okay, so again, it's the idea of larvae. That someone had parasitic larvae in the stomach, or as a woman,
Okay.
she had eaten contaminated raw fish. How many parasitic,
Gross.
that's right, how many parasitic larvae do you think they took out of her stomach?
500.
56.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, clearly my parasitic worm knowledge is not up to snuff.
Apparently. And then Brooks takes the worm and starts putting it in his jacket, which makes you think. I mean, you can see that Andy looks very uneasy about this whole thing going on. He's not really sure what's going on. He thinks that Brooks is about to eat this, and
Right, and Brooks also just gets the biggest smile on his face, and he's
that's right.
just like, "What is this about?"
That's right, and he also moves his hand closer to his mouth. He takes it in an arc that looks like he's about to put it in his mouth, even though he's not. And at this point, he puts it in the pocket of his jacket, and we see that there's a little bird there, that puts his quickly pull puts his head out and takes the worm and eats the worm.
Yeah, and because you don't realize, like I said, he like looks like he's gonna put it in his mouth, and he starts moving to his jacket. You do not see that bird until you get that insert shot where it's like it, because you see the pocket, you see the little bird head poke out and just nom on the grub, and it's so it's a very it's really doing a lot with like setting up like what is this gonna be, and you don't get the butt of the joke or the punchline of the joke until the very last second. It's, you know, another, like was it the last time, just small thing from Roger Deakins where he's just holding back and holding back, and then gives you the perfect insert shot of the bird, which is going to become very thematically important in my opinion.
Yes, I think so too. And then Brooks, you know, looks at Andy, and he goes, "Jake says thank you." And then he starts explaining. He goes, "Fell out of his nest over by the pleat shop." And as he's continuing to tell this story, he gets cut off because the minute ends. So again, I like the way they do this. I think this is a great introduction to Brooks, because as we all know, Brooks is a very tragic character, and you know, our first thought when we see him here is he's not playing with all his marbles.
Right, exactly. It's a perfect introduction to him because you're kind of like, who's this guy? He's off, he's a little bit weird. But then you start to see he's very sweet. You know, he's very caring. He's unlike any of the other prisoners we've really seen so far, even Red, who at this point is still very cold. He cares about a little baby bird with a broken wing, and he wants to nurse him back to health. You know, he's and I think that bird, which we will find out his name is Jake. As I said, he's very important, very symbolic. You know, it's the bird. Jake, I think, is in many ways kind of the Andy Dufresne. You know, and Brooks has a lot of parallels with Red, where, you know, Jake is this little bit, or Andy's this little baby bird that has fallen out of his tree, and now he's here in this prison, and maybe he needs to find someone older and who can like care for him and who cares about him. And maybe one day he will be able to fly to freedom. We will see how that
That's
goes.
right. And I mean, the book does mention a character named Brooks Hatlin. He's not the character with the bird. There's another guy who has a pigeon, which isn't but what they tell us, the one thing that I'm gonna say right now that they tell us about Brooks is that he's a guy who killed both his wife and daughter after he had a losing streak at poker back when Coolidge was president, which means that it was in the mid-20s. Which means he's only been there for 20 years, according to the book. But again, you know, we already know that Red's there longer than that. But later on, we find out in the movie when he's telling his story after he's been released that you know, he had seen automobiles before he went into prison in the aughts. So it means that he really was there for about 40 years, or whatever it is. 40, 50 years, or
I
something
think
like
because
that.
he does give a specific time. He does say when he first came in. You can do the math in the scene where you see his library for the
That's
first time. He talks about
right.
they made me librarian. I think it was like 1918. I had been in here for however many years before that. So you can, yeah, it's the aughts when he comes in. And that also brings up something, it's not related to this minute, but something that I think this movie does really well and really interestingly is how these guys are really preserved in amber. And they are like, you know, Andy Dufresne is like still in 1947, like, you know, when he still goes in. Brooks is still in, you know, 19 or whatever when he went in. Like, and the world continues to change around them, but Shawshank stays the same. They have no connection at all to the outside world other than the occasional movie, there's the posters that Andy Dufresne hangs, but there's those little bits of the outside world that creep in. And it's funny because you will often see new characters get introduced. You know, there's the character who comes in later once Andy's been there for like 20 years, who comes in the 60s, and it's like, okay, he's like a greaser. He is culture has moved on since they've been in here. When characters get out, they see like the world is so much different than when it came in. So I think that is such a fascinating thing to see because we also do not really see the outside world either. We are really in their perspective. and we are seeing these bits of pop culture from other from prisoners, from these little glimpses that we get come in. And I think Brooks later on really does a good job of that. Whereas, like, and you're thinking about, like, oh yeah, like you think this movie is like set in the 40s the whole time, but no, culture has moved on. By the time, the movie ends, we are decades beyond that. So it's a really interesting way to look at how these guys are really stuck in that routine.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. I never even thought about it, but you're 100% right. So the quote is, and we'll get to this in a few weeks, where he says, "I came here in 05, and they made me librarian in 1912."
There we go.
So if this is 1947, 1948 already by the time he gets into the library, maybe 49, so it means he's been there, was it 37 years by that point. He's been there
Yeah.
quite a long. Sorry, he was the librarian for 37 years. He's there for 40 something years.
So
But again,
really,
see,
like,
one of the things that this movie makes us always forget is that these people are hardened criminals. When you read the book and they tell you that Hadley that Brooks killed his wife and daughter, and we know that Red cut the brake wire in his car and killed his wife. All these different things. You wouldn't think that they're characters that you would want to come to find a way to love, but we do.
Right. And it really, I think, brings up a lot of these questions about rehabilitation, about, can, we forgive people for like these unforgivable acts and stuff. Like, I think it's really easy because, yeah, Red, when we meet him, Brooks, when we meet him, these are people who did horrendous things, but it was a lifetime ago. It's like they are not the same people. And I think that the way the movie illustrates that best is in the parole hearing scenes that we get with Red, where you see, like, there's three of them. You see at the beginning, he's just kind of, he just kind of goes through the motions, and then the middle, or the first one, he's more trying, and the second one, he's just kind of going through the motions. In the end, he really is grappling with the fact that he has really just moved on and become. And he's like, I wish, like all the stuff he's saying, I wish I could talk some sense into that kid. And I think it brings us some really interesting questions about, justice systems and the way that we look at, because, especially I think in today's culture, we're just like, someone does something awful. It's like, okay, that person is now canceled forever. Is there a way back if they really show remorse, if they really try to make improvements in their lives, if they try to make amends? This movie brings up a lot of those questions, because there's, and I think it errs on the side of like you can really, try to make right for the mistakes that you've made.
Definitely agree with that. All right, so today's segment is called Talking Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movies or narrators in movies.
Yeah, so I wanted to. This was, I think, a really interesting question. For the bottom of my list, number five, I wanted to go with a more traditional narration where it's just kind of telling you what, providing the context for what's going on. A movie that meant a lot to me when I was a kid was The Land Before Time. That's my number five. It's just kind of this old school narration of just like, it sets the tone very well for this kind of, epic kids movie about this really changing, amazing time. Want to shout out there. The rest of them are a little bit, a little bit more, a little different when it comes to narration adaptation. The Nick Cage movie, where he is essentially writing the movie that he is starring in. He plays Charlie Kaufman, who wrote the screenplay. It's about him writing the screenplay. And through the first half of the movie, he narrates that film, and the narration ends abruptly when he goes to a story writing seminar, and Robert McKee, as played beautifully by Brian Cox, goes, "God help you if you use narration." And then from then on, or "God help you if you use voiceover." And from then on, there was no more voiceover in the whole movie. It's so funny, and it's so brilliant, and it's very subtle. I had to shout that one out. Number three, Goodfellas. I'm sure this one is going to pop up on a number of other guest lists. If you think of great narration, you think of like the way that movie starts with the thing, I always wanted to be a gangster. It's great because he is an unreliable narrator. He is telling you things that might not match up exactly to what you're seeing, or you might be like, I would maybe interpret that or describe that differently. I love unreliable narrators. I think it's very interesting. Number two is The Big Lebowski, a movie that is narrated by what is seems to be just this kind of ethereal, like otherworldly voice, this omniscient narrator. But then some things start to happen where you're getting some opinions and stuff, and then he actually kind of shows up in the movie, this cowboy figure sitting at a bar next to Jeff Bridges as Lebowski. He kind of becomes a character in the story, talks a couple times directly to the camera. I think the Coen brothers are absolute masters of making a great script, and that comes across very clearly in the narration of The Big Lebowski, which is my favorite movie. And you know, we talked about last time we in the game we were playing, we talked about The Apartment, how much I love Billy Wilder. I would say another movie of his that is right up there with The Apartment for me is Sunset Boulevard. You think of like old school noir narration. This has got to, you, how can you not mention Sunset Boulevard? It's just this guy telling you the whole story of how he met Norma Desmond and all this insane things happening, and this thing, which is, it's not a spoiler because the movie starts with him dead in a pool looking down, and him just telling you, well, this is how I died. Here's, I got into this crazy situation with a monkey funeral and becoming caught up with this old like Hollywood starlet and her ex-husband like butler, all this insane stuff is happening. And it's just the sheer premise that this is a disembodied voice of a dead body that is telling you the whole story of how he died, I think is so funny and brilliant. And that movie, if you want to study good screenwriting, look at Sunset Boulevard.
All right, very cool. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. And now we will move
Thank
on
you.
to the daily game. So we're going to start off with Name That Book Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1990, and the original title of the story is We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
Total
Exactly.
Recall,
Very good.
right? Yeah, thank you. Another King, right?
No. No.
No, it's Philip K. Dick. It's Philip K. Dick. Never mind.
Nice try, but no. No. All right, so now we will play the second game, which is High Low, and hopefully once again we will try to find some movies that maybe you've seen.
Yeah. And I now I feel like I get the vibe with the IMDb users now. I understand, I think the median score is a little better now, 'cause I think I was overestimating the average IMDb
Okay.
users
Well, we're about to
taste.
find out. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
Yeah.
Right, the 2021 film Nightmare Alley.
Oh, this is a very good movie. I love that remake. I actually covered it recently on Underrated, so shout out, listen to that episode, everybody. I would say, I think was a bit of a divisive movie, though. I'll say seven flat.
All right, and Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes. I think this one was, let's say, 91.
All right. Well, first of all, Rotten Tomatoes, you definitely overshot it, because it is an 80. But IMDb, you got it right on the button. It was 7.
Oh, very nice, very
Yeah.
nice. All
Very
right.
good. All right.
Yeah, both groups should have given this movie more respect, and I talk about
There
that a
you
lot on that
go.
episode.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Right, the 1965 Oscar winner, The Sound of Music.
Oh, okay. Well, Sound of Music. I feel like that's one might I'm gonna go with Rotten Tomatoes first. I'm gonna say this is a beloved movie. It's like I said, a lot of those movies from back then, you're not writing about it unless it's unless you're giving it a good long review. I know I did the same thing with The Apartment, but I'm gonna do it here again. I'm gonna say 99%. For IMDb users, I think this is gonna be a high one. I'm gonna go with 8.3.
All right, it is 8.1, and Rotten Tomatoes is only
Okay.
83%.
Only 83%. I mean, that's not like my favorite movie or anything, but I'm surprised because it's such a critical
Me too.
darling.
Don't get it, but okay. All right, so let's spin the wheel for your final one today.
Right.
All right, the 2002 film The Pianist, which
Ooh,
I
that's a
think
really good movie.
should have beaten Chicago, but whatever.
I would agree with that. I think there was a couple of movies in 2002 that were significantly better than Chicago. That would be one of them for sure. This movie I think was very, very beloved at the time. I'll say for Rotten Tomatoes score, I'll say 93. And for audience score, I'll go 8 flat. No, I'll say 7.5. I've been overshooting these. I'm gonna go lower
All
myself
right,
a
well,
little.
yeah, we went the wrong direction on that because it's 8.5 and it's
Oh
a
wow, okay.
95%.
Okay, all right, well good. I'm glad at least one of these movies we're talking about is getting the proper respect that it deserves.
That's true. It's very true. All right, so would you like to tell everyone once again where they can find Derek McDuff?
Yeah, you can check out underratedmoviepodcast.com, where I talk about an underrated movie every other week. I would love you guys to come check that out. You can also find my writing at templeofgeek.com. I've been doing some film reviews over for them, so definitely check that out. Just go to Temple of Geek and look up Derek McDuff. You can find me there. There's links to all that stuff, though, just by going once again to any of my social medias, Underrated Movie Podcast.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to rob@movierob.net. Until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.